Up a series we did, and I didn't really plan for it to be a series, but that's just what the Lord kind of led. It would be in Exodus chapter 2. We've been talking about people around people, and Exodus chapter 2. And so we're finishing up that, and we'll start a new series next week in this Bible class hour. And on Colossians, running along our theme this year, which is complete in Him. So we'll announce more about that on Sunday morning. But people around people. Today we're going to talk about the people around Moses. We've done Timothy, and we've done Paul, we've done Jesus, we've done several different people. And today we're going to do Moses and just the people who are around him. And Exodus chapter 2, we'll start at verse 1. It says, "And there went a man of the house of Levi and took a wife of the daughter of Levi. And the wife and the woman conceived and bare a son. And when she saw him, that he was a goodly child, she hid him 3 months. And when she could not longer hide him, she took for him an ark of bulrushes and daubed it with slime and with pitch and put the child therein. And she laid it in the flags on the riverbank." All right, let's pray and we'll talk about Moses and the people around him. Lord, I pray you give us wisdom in the Word, and I pray the Spirit would guide us, and I pray that we'd see your truth, your wisdom, and Lord, really learn how to impact people, and how to be influenced also. Lord, your Word has a lot to say about the impact we have on people and the impact people have on us, and we're just looking at your examples of people's lives that you let us look into, and I pray that we would learn some lessons. I pray that you'd make me sanctified meat for the master's use, and speak through me and help all of us to grasp something new and helpful and encouraging from your word today, in Jesus' name. Amen. Moses, it was a man, of course, who had more of an impact than Moses did outside of Jesus. I mean, he had a huge impact. He saved a couple million people and was in charge when the outside of the cross, the greatest miracle in the history of human beings was done. The Red Sea is what God refers to the most in the Bible. And so it's a great, great impact he had. And Moses was a man with a great impact and an interesting man. And we're going to look into just the impacts on him. First of all, Moses' parents were nondescript in his life. And we've seen every situation. We saw, for example, Samuel, where his mom had a giant impact on his life, and same with Timothy, his mom and grandma. Moses, we don't see quite as much, and we don't really know the whole impact. It looks like his dad had very little impact on him, but we don't know that for positive, because he's in a very strange situation. First, his mom was at least virtuous enough to keep him alive, and that is the situation where in Egypt they said all the men were supposed to be killed when they were born. If they were a boy, the midwives are supposed to go and have the boys killed. And Moses, well, the midwives did what God wanted to do, which is not kill the children, and God blessed them for it. And I think that's, it says, verse 20, it says, "Therefore God," chapter 1, verse 20, "Therefore God dwelt well with the midwives." Why? Because the midwives didn't let them kill the children. And verse 21, "And it came to pass, because the midwives feared God, that he made them houses." I think just a little practical illustration with that in our lives is with abortion today, that if somebody will have their children, God will bless them. And that child will be blessed, and God will bless those people who do that, even in tough situations. And that's important. But his mom kept him alive, and then she kept him alive for 3 months. She saw her son. She loved him. Said he's a goodly child, maybe a strong, healthy child. I'm not sure. And then she said, "Well, I can't hide him anymore, and the whole family's going to die." And we don't know what she was thinking here. It's kind of an interesting story because the Bible doesn't go into her mindset. Why did she put him in an ark and put him in the water? And did she think that somebody would find the baby? Did she not know what else to do to hide him? Did she just put him in there to die? I don't think so, because she wouldn't have built the ark and made it so it floated and everything and all those things. But for some reason, she took her son and put him out in the water there and said, "There he goes," and off he floated. And that would be, boy, can you imagine the toughness of doing that? But she did everything she could to try to keep him alive and to try to keep him safe and hidden and not be killed. And it's a pretty tough situation. And of course, because she did this, God kept him alive. And God not only kept him alive, we don't know her lifespan, but it's even possible that God led her, that Moses led her out of Egypt, because and saved her. We don't know that. She'd be pretty old at that time, but it's feasible. And so she didn't give up her child, and she didn't do that. And I just want to say, for mothers to be courageous, and mothers to be courageous. And we live in a generation where moms have to be courageous. I mean, I hate to say that, but men aren't men in this generation. Men are very weak. My wife considers most men boys, most adult men boys, and she just does, because she doesn't think they're strong, and I mean physically strong. I mean they can't handle life. They can't take the lead. They can't handle responsibility. They can't overcome. They can't conquer. They can't find a way. Manhood is God made strong. The Bible calls a woman the weaker vessel. That's what God says. The man is supposed, and by the way, he's supposed to give honor unto her as a weaker vessel. That means he takes care of her. That's biblical. Men nowadays are very, very weak and cowardly, to be honest with you. I mean, a guy could be a big, tough, strong, strapping guy, but when it comes to providing for his family or the responsibility of children or being there for the kids or finding a way to find a job when there is no jobs or find a way to feed the family or do all that stuff, they cower. They just do. When things get tough, when the going gets tough, the men in America go hiding. And so it's very hard to be a woman today because she has to take on, not only, as the Bible says, the keeper of the home, which is her job biblically, but now she has to be the man because the man isn't the man. And the reason we have such a problem with women submitting to their husbands and following their husbands is I think, not because the women are bad and rebellious. That can be true. I think it's because they feel like they have to, because the men are so weak and cowardly. Now, biblically, that's still not what she should do. She should not be the one who takes charge when he won't take charge. There are biblical ways that she can let him lead, and she can push him to leadership. The right woman will do the right things where he will become a man and become a man. It takes a lot of wisdom to do that. Most people don't have no idea how to do that. Grab a book called, come to me in a sec here. Fantastic book on this is Created to Be His Helpmeet. And a fantastic book. I find that men have manhood in them. Nobody knows how to bring it out. And their dad didn't show them how to do it. And so, anyway, women have to be courageous. Being a single mom, you have to be brave. You can do one of two things. You can hide, get into the system, and be a weak mom and not discipline your kids and let your kids go wild. That's the normal. And just say, I don't know what to do. It's too hard. Or you can be courageous. And it's very hard to be courageous when you're taking care of kids by yourself and to face life and trials and finances. And by the way, you're going to have problem with discipline of children. That's just the way it's going to be. Now, it doesn't mean your kids can't turn out well. They can. It just... God designed to have a man and a woman there. And by the way, if you're a widow, God will give you a whole bunch of grace for that. But I want to say, you have to be courageous to face life. You have to be courageous. And mothers, be courageous. Life's scary. And all the things out there are scary. But be courageous. Secondly, his mom was courageous and kept him as long as she could. We know nothing about that except for family he's from. It doesn't say anything about Moses' dad. It looks like he didn't get raised around dad, if you know the story. The great thing about this is mom was miraculously able to be involved. Mom was miraculously able to be involved. The thing I talk about most with people and the thing I counsel most with people is very simple. In one form, it comes out in many forms. It comes out in a thousand different ways. But what it is you do the best you can, whether you know the solution that's going to work out or not, and God will take care of the rest. And Moses' mom, what's she thinking? I'm going to keep him alive, but what's going to happen? I can't let him grow up. He's going to die. Well, let's just keep him alive right now. and take care of the problem for today. And one day it was put him in the water. And then she probably said, now I lost my son, what am I going to do? Well, just do your best. Things work out when you do your best, but what most people do is they get to this point, and God has not worked out tomorrow. God has not promised to work out tomorrow. God only promises to work out today. Matthew 6:34 says that, and other verses. God is not obligated to work out your tomorrow, ever. God is not working tomorrow. God works in today. You will always be able to handle today. If, in order to obey God and do the right thing, you will have to see the way worked out ahead of time, you will not be an obedient Christian, because the way is not worked out ahead of time. God says, take no thought of the morrow. The morrow should take thought of itself. Sufficient of the day is the evil thereof. I will give you permission to worry about tomorrow and its problems if it is ever tomorrow. Okay? And then you can worry all you want about it. But until it's tomorrow, just worry about today. And you'll find out life how it works out real just fine. Because God doesn't promise to work out tomorrow. And so what happens is people go in life and they say, I don't see any way that's going to work, so I'm not going to obey God. Because even if I obey him, it's not going to work out. That is no faith, and you'll never go forward and never do great things for God, and you'll never succeed in life doing things that way. What you have to do is say, well, this is what God has given me to do today. I don't think it's going to work out tomorrow. I have no idea how that's going to work out, but I'm going to obey God today. If you do that, by the time you get to tomorrow, it'll be worked out. See, God just gives you one day at a time to handle. And it's so funny. If I can just get people to isolate today. I don't know what I'm going to do. I'm overwhelmed. I can't make it. I don't know what to do. I don't know. I said, okay, hold on. Can you handle today? Well, yeah, I can handle today, but I don't know what I'm going to. I said, okay, I'll tell you what. Handle today, and we'll take care of tomorrow. I promise you we'll work out tomorrow. Because everybody can always handle today. It's never today that's the problem. It's always tomorrow. Tomorrow's always the problem, and God has not worked out tomorrow because you don't take care of today. And if you don't take care of today, tomorrow will not get worked out by God. And tomorrow will be a mess. And by the way, today's usually a mess because you didn't take care of today yesterday. You follow that? And the reason you don't feel like you can handle today if you don't is because yesterday you didn't take care of today. If you just take care of one day at a time, it'd be fine. And Moses' mom, the amazing thing is Moses' mom did the best she could, and she ended up with her boy. Alive! How did that work out? That doesn't make any sense. How, when they kill all the boys, and she's in Egypt, and if any Jew has her child, the boy's going to be killed. How is she going to raise her child and have her child? Because you got a real big God who can figure things out. And she did what she could. And that's important. Next, his sister acted wisely and was a blessing. His sister acted wisely and was a blessing. And that is possible for sisters to be a blessing. And Exodus chapter 2, how many don't think, never mind, I won't ask. And sisters can be a blessing, and brothers too. And I always laugh. Girls usually think their sisters are a pain. And it's because rivalry. And it's funny, but this sister was a real blessing to Moses, her little brother. And so Exodus chapter 2 and verse 4. And his sister stood afar off to wit what would happen, what would be done unto him. And the daughter of Pharaoh came down to wash herself at the river. And her maidens walked along by the riverside. And when she saw the ark among the flags, she sent her maid to fetch it. And when she had opened it, she saw the child, and behold, the baby wept. And she had compassion on him and said, this is one of the Hebrew children. Here's a smart God up in heaven and nudges Pharaoh's daughter down to the river to take a bath and nudges upriver. Moses' mom to go put the thing in there, and he nudges the water to float it down, and he pinches the baby to make it cry when it gets by Pharaoh's daughter, and she has compassion on the baby, and she takes it. But Moses' sister was walking along to see. She's walking along the river, seeing, well, I wonder what in the world's going to happen to my brother, and she's walking along, and all of a sudden she's hiding back in the bushes there, and she sees Pharaoh's daughter come down and says, oh, what's Pharaoh's daughter going to do? And the baby starts crying. She picks him up and has compassion on the baby and says, we need, it's one of the Jewish babies, and it's crying. I want, you know what, let's save it. And she says, what are we going to do to feed this thing? And out pops Moses' sister and says, you know what, would you like me to go get one of the Jewish ladies to take care of the baby? And she says, yeah, that'd be good. We need somebody to nurse the baby. I know a lady who is ready to nurse right now. And along she comes, Mom, guess what? You're going to go take care of your son. Pharaoh's daughter took care of it. So she acted very wisely, and she had good discretion, and of course brought Moses' mom to Moses. Moses' mom takes the baby, and she says, would you like to take care of this baby for me? And she says, yeah, I'll do that. And takes care of her own baby and gets it, and her baby's going to live. So God worked it all out in his sovereignty and in his goodness. And the sister was acted wisely and was a blessing. That's all we know about her. Next, then Moses kept him alive through a strange family situation. The Lord kept him alive through a strange family situation. He was basically raised as Pharaoh's grandson in Pharaoh's house, which is the only way he could stay alive as a male at that time. And then the amazing thing about that is living in Pharaoh's house, he is raised in royalty with all the education, with all the knowledge, with everything there, and is raised in that situation with his mom nursing him as a baby. We don't know how long or how often she had access to him for sure, but we know it was long enough. We see later in life, it was long enough to teach him his heritage and his responsibility as a Hebrew. So he was at least a grown child, and because later in life he comes out as an adult, and he sees an Egyptian or a Jew fighting. And he goes out and kills the Egyptian. And in Acts, it tells us that he did that thinking that the Jews would know that by him, he was going to set Israel free. So he knew a whole bunch about God, about the Egyptians, about the Jews. And so he was raised in Pharaoh's house, yet learned the ways of God, which, of course, Pharaoh's family wouldn't have taught him. Strange family situations. And we have strange family situations today, don't we? It's a mess out there. It's confusing. many times you try to figure it all out. And this person married this person. And sometimes it gets complicated. I mean, this person married this person, but this person brought the kids from the former marriage, but it wasn't actually their kids, but the other spouse wouldn't keep the kids. So it's really not their kids. And they're married to this other family, and so there's a stepchild of this lady, but really this is their stepdad, and now there's step-stepmom, and it gets confusing in situations in life. A lot of kids right now are raised by grandma and grandpa because mom and dad aren't responsible and can't take care of their kids, and that is true. We've had plenty of kids come to church who are in foster care, and we picked them up and brought them to church, and the state's raising them. I mean, they're just going from house to house to house. I don't understand. I mean, they go... I mean, hundreds of houses many times. I mean, they're 2 weeks, 2 months, 2 days, just jumping house to house. It's convoluted. It's complicated nowadays. And people go from all kinds of situations, and other people raise them. Many teenagers are couch surfing. They're going to their friends' houses, and they're living as a teenager at their girlfriend's house, their boyfriend's house. And we have that, and we have people who are doing that on Sunday here all the time. And sometimes mom and dad kick the kids out. It just happens. And sometimes they had to, and sometimes it was because the parents were responsible. And it is a mess out there. The God's design is not being followed in our culture. And so many times you get complicated situations, and you might look at it. And what I used to do is look at it. And by the way, I grew up in a messed up situation. I grew up, I have two stepbrothers and a stepsister. They all came from a different dad, and they're all older than me. Then my mom got married for just a minute to my dad, and then he left. And then we grew up with no man there in the house, and then I had all my stepbrothers and sisters. Their dad is very involved in their life. My dad wasn't involved in my life. and then my mom was not home most of the time, and so I kind of raised myself. And then whenever I'd find a family to kind of take me in, or it'd feed me, then I would usually hang out there because I'd cook for myself my whole life, and I was gone. I'd leave as an 8-year-old child. I'd leave 2-3 days at a time and not tell my mom where I was going. I'd just disappear, and many times I'd stay 3, 4, 5 days. I'd just be gone. Maybe I'd call my mom, maybe I wouldn't, and so I was in a weird situation, and many of us are. I want to say in that all that oddness, I walk into it and I look at it and I see these lives and we see them. I want to say this. You know the amazing thing is, God can use it. I don't know how he does, And sometimes it looks like you are so out of God's design and plan here. I don't know what's going to happen here. But you know what I find out? God used the way I was raised to form me into what he needed to be, me to be, to minister to certain kinds of people. He just used it. And I turned out, in some people's opinion, okay. And I see sometimes you say, man, that kid is just a walking bad statistic. I mean, everything's wrong. However, God works and they turn out okay. And so don't think because a family situation's bad, it's going to turn out bad. Because a family situation's weird, it's going to be all wrong. No, God had Moses raised in Pharaoh's house, and he was going to go back, and he knew Pharaoh. And there's a reason a Jew could walk in the middle of Egypt and say, I'm going to talk to Pharaoh, because a Jew couldn't do that. And so there's a lot of things where God just used it, and don't ever think God can't use the mess in a troubled situation. It's okay. God can use it. Next, Pharaoh's daughter acted as mom. Pharaoh's daughter acted as mom. We saw that in verse 10. And the child grew, and she brought him up unto Pharaoh's daughter, and he became her son. And she named him Moses and all those things, so because it drew him out of the water. So she was raised by Pharaoh's mom. Don't even know if there's Pharaoh's daughter. We don't even know if Pharaoh's daughter was married. We don't know anything. We just know that he was raised in a weird, odd situation. And that's okay. And one of the things I don't want you to ever do and don't let people do in life is to say, I did not have the ideal situation. My family was a mess because we developed a society that says when things aren't as they should be, that means I will be messed up. And yes, it generally has an impact on you, but it's not a fatal impact. You can be just fine. Hey, I've been married very, very, very happily for 20 years. I had six of my kids. My oldest one's in Bible college. Six of my kids were riding to church this morning, and I talked to my wife because they were all laughing and singing and having fun. And I said, honey, I can't believe we've done enough right that our kids love going to church so much. And she says, boy, they sure do love coming to church, don't they? Okay. I grew up in a terrible family, and I've got a tremendous home. I don't have to be a victim of I don't have to be divorced because I grew up in a divorce home. I don't have to be a bad dad because my dad is a bad dad. And I don't have to do that stuff. You are not a victim unless you let yourself be. You increase the odds by your responsibility as a parent. Growing up a bad home increases the odds, but that means nothing. That means it's more likely. That means you have to work a little harder. But if you're going to go when you are 25 or 30 or 35 or 40 and say, because of my parents, now it's on you. You're old enough now, you're making your choices, okay? You don't have to be ruined in life. And we say that a lot, but we have to get that pounded into our brains that you don't have to be something certain because of something else. You will make your choices. And that's the way it is. Next, number five is what I have it at. Most of Moses' development in his life was alone. I think this is an interesting point. Most of Moses' development in his life was alone. Moses, he went out and he tried to kill. He killed the Egyptian to save the Jew because they're fighting because he was hitting the Jew and going to kill him. And the next day, he goes out and two Jews are fighting. He says, don't fight each other. What are you doing? And somebody had seen it. And they said, what are you going to do, kill one of us like you killed the Egyptians? We don't want you to rule over us. And so Moses felt at that time rejected by his own people. He was afraid that the Egyptians were going to kill him because he killed an Egyptian. And what did he do? He ran out in the wilderness. And he began to be alone for 40 years, wandering around. He felt rejected by the Egyptians. He didn't feel like he felt it fit in anywhere. I'm in with the Egyptians, but I'm a Jew. And when I'm with the Jews, they think I'm an Egyptian. Nobody loves me. That just, his life was awkward and odd. And by the way, outside of Seattle and a few areas like Seattle, did you know mixed race children feel that way? Now in Seattle, everything's in New York City, and a few other areas, Los Angeles, everybody's mixed. They're just of races and everything. In Seattle, we don't care. We don't even notice it hardly. But a lot of people who are mixed race, they feel awkward in either race, which is kind of sad. It's just the way our society is. And Moses had that. He was dressing and haircut and everything like an Egyptian, but he was Jewish by race. Of course, he looked different than the Egyptians. Egyptians look Arab right now. They weren't originally that. The Muslims came through and killed Egyptians and bred with them. The Egyptians at that time are black, and Hebrews aren't. So he stood out around the people. And so he felt awkward, not at home. He felt rejected by both races, and he runs out in the wilderness and goes out there, and he ends up finding a family. And we find even his family wasn't all good. He went out in the wilderness. We find him alone a lot. We find him alone on the mount for 40 days while everybody else is waiting for him to come down. We find Israel keeps on talking about Moses and Aaron. Moses taking us out here. He was him and us, was the way the nation always looked at him. He wasn't buddy-buddy with the nation because they thought they were blaming him half the time for everything wrong in their life. And then they thought he was different from him. And then they always talked about Moses. And then they would say, you go up to God, we'll stay down here. In other words, he was him, and then there's the rest of us. All that leads you to a very lonely existence. And I want to say this. Loneliness and aloneness, if you grasp it and you accept it, will not ruin you, but make you great. But a lot of people cannot handle loneliness and aloneness. They cannot handle alone because they think there's something wrong with them. My aloneness, I had it as a child some, but I was kind of like a kid who always, you know, like most kids, I ran around and tried to get around other kids. But God started isolating me a little bit when I was 17, when I really started serving him. He got me alone. Now, I have a happy home. I get along with people at church. I have lots of friends and people love me, and I love a lot of people, and that's all fine. But if you know me, I'm a loner. And you say, how do you do that when you got a big family? I'm around them and I'm with them and I like them and I'm with them and we have a good time. We spend time together and play games and do everything. But I'm a loner by nature. I drove from Lancaster back to here in September, 18 hours drive. Do you think I was the least bit miserable to be alone for 18 hours? I love being alone. I'm awesome company. No, honestly, I love being around people. I love being alone. Everybody in the world needs to learn to be alone. If you're in a house filled with people, or you're around people all the time at work, you need some time alone. Now, I know there's people who get, I'm not talking about the guy who hides in his basement and, you know, wears a tin hat and all that stuff. I'm not talking about those weirdos, okay? You can get too isolated where you're weird, okay? And I know people who do that, and you get weird. You're not supposed to do that. You should have interaction with people, hang around people, walk with people, have companions. You should do all those things. Those people are too busy trying to figure out, you know, the problems with the UN and the World Bank that are coming and the black helicopters flying over their basement and everything. I mean, they just get weird after a while. If you don't have interaction with people, you get strange, by the way. Having said that, Moses was developed by being alone with God. And every day you had to have alone time with God. And you had to learn to go to a walk occasionally alone. And by the way, I want to say this. Men especially, there's something wired in men where men do better when they get some alone time. If you have a man and you stick him around people at work all the time, he comes home and you make him stay around everybody all the time and the noise, it gets to men. And they get kind of cranky and mad and frustrated. Let the man go out and be alone sometimes. I will go, and probably next week, I'll go for a day alone in the mountains. Just middle of nowhere. And I need to do that. That's just what I need to do. And so Moses was developed. A lot of his development was alone. And he got separated from people. Why? Can I say this? Maybe there will be a period in your life where you get real lonely. But that period, if you used it right, you will not be that lonely because you will begin to turn upward to God. It's very hard to find and get to know God in a crowd. But when you get kind of lonely and people who are supposed to be there aren't there, and even when people are there, you don't feel like you're with them or they understand. It's a situation that many people went through in the Bible. Elijah saying, I'm the only one left, and Moses and Jesus in the wilderness for 40 days, and Paul and Demas hath forsaken me, and in the Arabian desert. It's just a biblical pattern where God, when he wants somebody to get to know him, just kind of gets him alone and says, you and I are going to get to know each other. I want you not looking around at everybody else. You're going to feel lonely for a while. No one's going to understand. I will, so talk to me. If you use it that way, you'll get to know God real well. If you freak out and panic and jump into some bad relationship or the other things people do in that situation, it'll ruin you. But it's okay to be alone. And most of Moses' life was actually developed while he was alone. And the greatest part of Moses happened for 40 days alone in the mount. And that's good. Next, his wife wasn't always supportive. Exodus chapter 4, his wife was not always supportive. In verse 26, and he let him go, and she said, a bloody husband art thou because of circumcision. God told Moses, circumcise your child. She got mad at Moses, and she said, you're a bloody husband. And she wasn't real supportive at this time. And his wife wasn't always supportive. Don't know a whole lot about her, but she was there for his life, but she also was harsh and critical when he probably needed comfort. Next, his brother was with him, and they worked together for many years. Exodus chapter 7. His brother was with him, and they worked together for many years. His brother was probably born before the thing of killing the children, because he was his older brother. And we see in Exodus chapter 7, verse 1, and the Lord said unto Moses, see, I have made thee a god unto Pharaoh, and Aaron thy brother shall be thy prophet. And we can't go through all the verses. We're a little low on time. But you'll see Moses and Aaron over and over hanging out together, going together, staying together, going to God together, crying to God together. God gave him a brother. can I say one comment on this before I don't got time to spend a lot of time on it. If you have four brothers or three sisters or two brothers and a sister, and you have one that is mean and nasty and terrible to you, and you have one that's good to you, would you please spend your time thinking about the good one? Because you know what most people do? All they want to do is talk about the bad one and think about the bad one. And they'll keep calling the bad one and keep talking to the bad one. You know what they said yesterday when I called them? You called them again? Spend time thinking about the good one. Spend time with the good one. Enjoy them. And Moses had a good brother. And he was with him for most of his life. He also let Moses down. Exodus 32. He also let Moses down. Exodus 32. I can't read the verses. I don't have time. In this story, you'll know the story. Moses up on the mountain praying, walking with God, getting the Ten Commandments. Aaron's down there leading the people. And the people said, you know what? Let's go back to Egypt. And they said to Aaron, make us gods. And so he says, okay, bring me all your gold. And they took the gold and they brought it to Aaron. Aaron burned it, melted it all down, made an idol of a lamb, and brought it out and said, okay, worship this idol. This is the God that brought you out of Egypt. Boy, you talk about your brother letting you down. You come off the mountain, they're naked, they're dancing, they're committing idolatry to an idol that your brother made who you left in charge. Talk about coming home to the kids in a mess. Oh, man. And he comes home and sees all that. And he says, Aaron, what are you doing? He was mad at Aaron. And he punished Aaron with the rest of them. He was mad. Aaron let him down. And Aaron failed in this thing. And then he goes, Aaron, what'd you do? And Aaron said, it's the craziest thing. We took all of our gold, threw it in the fire, and out came this lamb. A dumb excuse. At least make up a good one, Aaron. Say Joe did it and he disappeared. Or something. I mean, and he lets him down totally. But by the way, after this, Moses and Aaron are close. God used Aaron. God made him the high priest. And him and Moses served together. I want to say his brother let him down. Don't cast people away for mistakes, but for unrepentant, continual choices and hurting you. And I'm not saying cast them away even. But if someone's going to hurt you in your life at a certain point, whether it's a spouse or a sister or a brother or a mom or dad, and they're going to mess up and do something wrong and fail you, and you're casting them away, you're going to end up pretty lonely by the time you're about 50. Because Moses took Aaron back. Hey, listen. I'm glad people didn't cast me away for my mistakes. I've had plenty of them. We don't have time to talk about them. But I want to say this. If your family member or somebody who's supposed to be there for you messes up and they come back to you and said, you know what, they were drinking at the time, maybe they just hurt you somehow, they failed you, they weren't there, whatever, they mess up and they come back and said, you know what, I'm sorry, can we be friends again? Then you know what, biblically, you ought to be doing that and forgiving them and taking them back. Don't lose somebody because they messed up 20 years ago or 10 years ago or 5 years ago. Let them back in. Now, if they're harmful and they're going to damage you or hurt you or they're dangerous, I understand that. You don't have to hang around them. You can forgive them in your heart. You don't have to be around them. But if they come back, let them be close again. Because Moses did with Aaron, and God used Aaron, and God did it, by the way. And next, last, God brought people he needed along to help him. God brought Moses people along to help him. And in Exodus 17, we'll just show you one example of that. Throughout his life, even though Moses was a loner, God sent people into his life to help him. This is important. This helps me a lot because I'm a person who's very who's a loner by nature, and you're probably scratching your head at that with knowing me and stuff. I'm a very diverse person. I just am. I like people. I like being alone. I'm ambidextrous. I'm very diverse in every way. But being a loner, one of the things that's hard for me is to have people help me. I don't like people helping me. I don't know why. You say, why is that, Pastor? I have no idea. I have had to make myself let people help me because I'm not good at it. I just want to do things myself. I don't want people helping me, doing things for me, and they do it. My nature says, no. How many of you are like me? You don't like people helping you. Okay. It's a bad thing because God sends you people to help you. And I've learned that I'm not letting them be a blessing and help and serve and be a part of things. And it's not a good thing. And Moses here, he had to have somebody help him. And you will need people to help you and hold your arms up. Exodus 17, verse 11. And it came to pass, and Moses held up his hand, that Israel prevailed. And when he let him down his hand, Amalek prevailed. But Moses' hands were heavy, and they took a stone and set it under him, and he sat thereon. And Aaron heard stayed by his hands, and one on the one side, and the other on the other side. And his hands were steady until the going down of the sun. And when his hands were lifted up, they won the war. Yeah, God sending people to help him. And I want to say this, in your life, let people help you. Because somebody in the past betrayed you doesn't mean that everybody's always going to. Just because, and if you, maybe you're like me, you had to, I had to, early in life, scratch and claw and do everything myself. Okay, that's just what my life was. It was, I had to scratch and claw and make my way. I had to learn how to work. I had to teach myself everything in life. Because I became so independent, I became too independent. I had to back up and say, you know what? They want to help me. It'll ease my load. They can be a blessing. It'll help them. They really do want to help. God sent them along. I'm going to let them help. And if you learn to do that, you'll be a better person. And you'll also have the people involved in your life that God sent along. I'm not talking about being a mooch. Help me. I need everybody to help me. God sent you to help me. That's not what I'm talking about. God sends you people. And they'll be a blessing to you. And let them be a blessing. And let them be a blessing. Because God sent Aaron and her to hold up Moses' arms. Because he couldn't hold his arms up anymore. And there'll be a time when you can't make it unless you let the help that God sent you help you. That's important. All right, those are people around Moses. Let's go ahead and pray. Father, thank you for the chance to learn from your word. I pray that we would learn from these relationships in Moses' life. He's an interesting study of how he was raised and what happened in his life. And thank you for how you used him, how he turned out pretty good in spite of the chaos. I pray, Lord, that you'd use us and help us to have the right kind of relationships and be used by you and help us to turn out well because we always got a Father in heaven who can help us, Lord. And I pray we'd follow these things and learn these things and be productive in life for you, Father. We pray in Jesus' name. Amen.